Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Jim.
Your energy report has just come out. What are your big headlines? Of course, no doubt the Middle East is playing big time.
Yeah. Part of it is war premium. Part of it is supply and demand. So let's start with war premium. We know about what was going on with the Red Sea, the Allied shipping, the Americans and the UK destroyers knocking down the attacking missiles and drones. Then the Americans and the Brits used submarines, aircraft, and warships to bomb targets, command and control, ammunition dumps, radar installations, anything that they knew that was being used to attack the Red Sea. And, the question is, did they do enough to slow things down and maybe remove that part of the war premium? On the other hand, the move in the last 24 hours where Iran bombed Pakistan because there's terrorists or separatists from the southwest part of Iran on the border of Pakistan that are in the Pakistani side, and they want, of course, to bring their tribes and break away from Iran. So the Iranians bombed Pakistan, and now Pakistan, in return, went after the anti-Pakistan insurgents in Iran that have been sponsored and supported by Iran. So Iran has not been directly involved in the war, in any parts of the war, until the last 24 hours. It's been their proxies. So today we saw a war premium and the price of WTI rose over $74. Could it go up a couple more bucks? Yes, but I don't think the Iranians want this to be an all-out war with Pakistan. Both are nuclear-capable entities, and Pakistan and Iran aren't the best of friends. Would China get in there to help Pakistan? Whatever it is, it would just... you had a Marty Armstrong on, last week, and he was talking about the war cycle, and, it was nasty enough with Russia and Ukraine. Then you add in Gaza, Hamas with Israel. Now you bring in Lebanon with Hezbollah, which, may get worse, and now you've got Iran and Pakistan. And then, of course, the elections in Taiwan went to the party that's the most anti-China. That's going to, mean that China, the President Xi has said that they will integrate Taiwan at some point. So there's enough, red flags around the world where the war premium and for oil is there, but more importantly, a war cycle is not good for the world because it means much more inflation because of the all of the economies going to militant or militarizing their economies, massive amounts of new weaponry, increasing, the armies, navies, air forces. Given a time when the Fed is trying to lower inflation and at the same time as governments still have obscene levels of deficits, 6% in the States, $2 trillion, you know, larger and larger debt loads with the interest costs that are now the biggest item, $1.1 trillion in the states out of a $4.6 trillion revenue budget. So 20-something percent of revenues are being used just to pay the interest on the debt. And, of course, that's going up by $2 trillion a year. And, of course, you know, Biden doesn't seem to care about the deficit, and he wants, you know, more money for, you know, to fund the deficit, to give away, you know, and cover off student loans, and to provide money for Ukraine and Israel, but still doesn't want to do anything about the U.S. border. I give credit to the Speaker of the House that he's saying there's no deal unless we do the U.S. border, southern border. And so, you know, the deadline is coming in the next 48 hours if there's going to be a deal.
Well, when you see those people coming up from Ecuador, and there it's basically a civil war, government versus all of the narco gangs, you can see why they're fleeing. Would it be more helpful if they helped Ecuador settle its problems rather than deal with the people coming to the border?
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, they should be, you know, they should be saying simple to Mexico that remain in Mexico policy comes back, and that if they don't, then, you know, there'll be surcharges monies that, Mexican employees make in the States, exports from Mexico to the U.S., you know, even though you do have a free trade deal, put on taxes on that. And then, you know, tell Honduras and Ecuador and Guatemala, you know, and Venezuela, you either keep your people in there or we're coming after you. And we'll blow the shit out of, you know, send in special forces. You know, the Americans are at war with the cartels, and they're not at war in terms of what they're acting. They, you know, they call it a war on terrorism, a war on the drug industry and the gangs, but you know, Biden just doesn't want to, you know, do what he's supposed to do as the president. And right now, given what we saw in Iowa, it sure looks like President Trump is going to get the Oval Office again. And, you know, for all of his personal problems and quirks and, you know, opening his mouth and you wonder what, you know, what's coming out of it next, he has the ability to swing the big stick. And Americans may say, we'll take his personal foibles and problems and idiocracies because we want a strong president rather than the Melba Toast geriatric who's in the office now.
Now, the OPEC report came out. What did it say? And is it actually telling us anything useful?
Well, you know, OPEC keeps on throwing out that they have cut 1 million barrels by the Saudis alone, 1.2 million by OPEC, in total 2.2 million barrels. And they keep on saying, oh, we're going to extend it to the end of Q1, maybe Q2, Q3. And the world accepts that, but they don't look at the numbers. So I go through the numbers, and I look at June of 2023, and of course the cuts were supposed to start in July, and they produced 28.2 million. But Angola now has come out of OPEC, so you got to remove OPEC from, you know, 2023, 1.1 million. So the base was 27,087, so 27,087,000 barrels. December of 23, this is straight out of the, you know, the report that I'm looking at, they produced 26,700, up 73,000 barrels on the month. So number one, barrels are going up. But when you take 26.7 out of the 27.087, it means that the total cuts from July, when they were supposed to cut 2.2 million, to today is only 387,000 barrels. So when they talk about that there's a lot of product available and that inventories are growing in the States, they're in excess in China, and they're slowly buying in China, that there's enough inventory, you know, around or in Europe, that 300, that's where the issue has come, that OPEC talks the talk, doesn't walk the walk, and the amount of production that they've cut is only 387,000, and that the 2.2 million is rhetorical barrels, not real barrels, and that's the reason why the price is in the 70s and not in the 80s or 90s. And once we get through the worst of winter, I think we'll see a bust of 70, maybe to 65 to 67, and I think we get another great buying opportunity. So the report I sent out today was saying that in the next few weeks, I expect one more decline in the price of crude, one more decline in the S&P TSX Energy Index. We had talked for a long time about the index going to 220, 230. Today it's down. Right now, it's down to 235. So 10 more points to the downside, and we were down, I think, 4 or 5 yesterday, and we could be getting another buy signal there. And then the S&P Energy Bullish Percentage Index has come down 20 points in the last 2 weeks to 45%. I think that we probably should look at that coming down below 10%, which would give me another buy signal.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Is fracking a big factor in the U.S. remaining self-sufficient to the point that they can export? And if the Saudis do cut back, they can still just weather it and keep prices reasonable.
Yeah, U.S. exports last week were 5 million barrels. And the reason that was increasing was that shipping was able to move. And remember, the U.S. was producing 13.3 million of crude oil, another 9 million of natural gas liquids and renewables. So the U.S. is producing 22 million barrels. It's only consuming 19.9 last week. So we have a massive surplus, and the light oil that comes from the Permian and the Eagle Ford are all going to be shipped, internationally, because they can't be used in the refineries on the Gulf Coast, which are used to using and burning heavier barrels that they were getting originally from Mexican Mayan and Venezuelan, and now they get a lot from Canada, where we ship by pipeline and we ship by rail down to the U.S. So U.S. inventories last week grew. If you look at motor gasoline, they were up 3.1 million barrels. Distillates up 2.4. So you continue to see builds in inventory. And this is winter. It's supposed to be peak demand. So it just says to you that there's more than enough product in the United States. And with the excess, they're shipping it to buyers around the world. They'd probably like to get better than $73, $74. And so I think that once we see this one more decline, once the war premium shrinks some more, then we're going to see, prices finally take off. I believe we'll be looking at $90 WTI in Q4 of 2024. And I think that's going to be because these low prices means companies are not going to spend as much money as they were. We're getting announcements from companies now saying that they're going to delay some of their drilling into the Q3 because, prices they don't think will pick up until Q4. Anything when the price of oil goes below 70, companies stop drilling because the economics aren't there so well. So my view is one more pullback will give us another great buying opportunity. We'll add some more new ideas to the list. And as you know, in December, we added 7 ideas to the buy list. In March of 23, we added 14, 7 on the 13th, 7 on the 15th. So we're in buy mode. We're very bullish on the sector for the long term. I think, because of the underinvestment, because of the need to bring on raw materials for the renewable world, copper, nickel, aluminum, lithium, all these things into the end of the decade, into 2035, that we are going to see significant increases in demand for crude oil and natural gas from the non-OECD, and we're going to see a decline in oil demand in the OECD but an increase in natural gas consumption in the OECD. So natural gas has both benefit from the OECD and the non-OECD, and we're big fans of natural gas. Again, remember at the end of this year, we're going to be filling gas into the Coastal Gas Pipeline for LNG Canada ramp up, and then ramp and Coastal will probably want to fill the tankers right by their by the facility. So all of that's going to be an increase of two BCF a day, and we're only producing 17. So that's a nice 10% increase. And then we're going to probably see a large number of announcements, LNG Canada Phase 2, all the other projects that are moving forward towards FID. And by the end of this decade, we could have 6 to 7 BCF of export capacity for LNG, which means the Western Canadian basin of Saskatchewan, Alberta, and BC are going to see pretty robust natural gas prices going forward. So anytime you get bargains in natural gas stocks and in the commodity driven or market driven corrections, we use those to be buyers. And we recommend on the next decline that whatever your fully invested weighting is in terms of your goal for energy, some people may want a market weight. Some people in Western Canada may want an over market weight. Whatever that is, we think that it's time to get to that. After being, as you know, I was quite cautious during 2023.
Should Canadians really be cheering for LNG? Friend of the show, Stuart Muir from ResourceWorks, said each one of those LNG tankers, when it leaves, has over $100 million worth of product on it.
Yeah, and if it goes to Japan or South Korea or Vietnam or Japan or China or wherever it goes, the shipping time and distance is less than if it was coming from the Gulf Coast. We have problems with the Panama Canal with water depths, so another advantage to Canada. And we should have done this 20 years ago, but between the issues with the politicians and the First Nations and the environmentalists, we got beat up by 20 years, and the Americans went from nothing to the largest exporters of LNG in the world, ahead of Australia and Qatar.
Yes. Well, until recently, natural gas was considered clean, and now, for some reason, there's a war against natural gas. Well, what would you rather have in your neighborhood, a natural gas plant or a coal-fired plant?
Yeah, that's the whole issue is, if we have blackouts, do you really want to be bringing on coal facilities like they are in Germany, because there's a shortage when they have power shortages? We, a week ago, we're pushing the limit of the power capability to be developed in Alberta because, the solar wasn't working with all the snow covering the panels. And it was they sent out a warning to everybody to lower their demand, their consumption. It was one of those warnings, the beeping on your phone.
Yeah.
And everybody turned down lights. And then Saskatchewan was able to send extra power to Alberta. So, a nice neighborly action on their part.
Yes, this strain on the power grid, does this prove that electrical cars really are impractical, at least with our current facilities?
Well, I think in Canada, with our cold weather, with batteries not able to charge up enough, with the batteries going down, we've seen a lot of Teslas sitting on the road with, waiting to be towed. Because everything that you thought they were going to do, if it said it was 300-kilometer capability on the battery, you get really cold weather, and it could only be 50 or less. So I think that battery technologies are going to have to be improved for northern climates. And, Tesla's trying to sell a lot in northern Europe because Norway and Denmark and Sweden want to clean up the air. But I think they're all realizing that there are limits to it. And we've seen BYD, become bigger and now is bigger than Tesla, and BYD has backing from Warren Buffett. So I'm in the skeptic camps that in northern climates, cold climates, electric vehicles are going to be the solution. I think maybe it's hybrids or maybe, the government's attempt to say that in 2035, you're not able to buy any car that's not an EV. Let's watch to see if any of these politicians start driving and then all of a sudden realize they can't go very far and need a tow. Maybe they'll wake up to the facts of life.
Yeah, well, they live in ivory towers, take $8,000 a day vacations. They don't blink.
We know what Trudeau did, and was it ethical? And so the ethics are going to be on that. But you see the government ministers driving around in these gigantic, black GM, some armor protected vehicles. Let's see how those do as EVs, and how if they can do the job they're supposed to, and maybe after a little while of realizing they don't. Maybe they'll come to, it'll be like a 2x4 hitting them over the head saying, oops, what we thought was going to work is not. We better find another solution.
How is the crude business doing in Alberta, energy overall?
Well, the price of natural gas, because of the cold weather, has gone from sub $2 to $6, $7. So natural gas prices are very healthy. If you remember, WTI is 74, but the Canadian dollar is 1.35. So when you take that in Canadian dollar terms, and most of the costs are in Canadian dollar terms, the industry is doing quite well. Cash flows in Q4 of that will be reported in the next few weeks, compared to Q4 of the year before, may be not great. And the question will be, how did companies do with their production comparisons year over year and compared to Q3? And then the other issue is, how do their balance sheets look? What's going on with their debt? I think there will be some companies that will disappoint, and I think there will be some companies that will surprise, but the bulk of them will probably be neutral because of the price weakness. But if I'm right, that we see stronger prices in Q2, much stronger prices in Q3, and over $90 for WTI in Q4, and we may have, of course, then a Canadian dollar that's stronger. If we have $90 to $100 in Q4, I think we're going to see the index from the lows that I think are going to come in that 220, 225 level. I think there's 30, 40% upside in the general index. And then if you take into account the big weighting of, IMO, CNQ, Synovus, Suncor, that the more opportunistic, vibrant growth stories could see 50% upside or even 100% upside between the lows I see coming in the next few weeks and where the highs will be at the end of the year. So last year, if you remember, I was bullish in March, and we recommended ideas. We got ahead of ourselves, and I said, be careful. We went down again into December. We said it was a buy signal again. I think we're going to get another buy signal in January, February, and then I think we're going to be off to the races for the end of the year. And just like in the 2000 and 2008 massive bull market, when we went from $10 oil to $147, there were pullbacks along the way. That's what we had last year. We're having a little bit one now. But there was also massive times when, after those pullbacks where the sector just did unbelievably well and outperformed everything else. And I think commodities as a whole will be the story of 2024. And energy, which is the biggest component, will do extremely well. Last year, for example, you saw uranium prices go up and Cameco was a double. So, stocks, big stocks can double. So if we have $90 oil by the end of this year versus $65 at the low in the coming weeks, almost a 50% move in the commodity, and we could see stocks go up 50 to 100%.
Joseph, thank you so much for chatting with us. Oh, and by the way, you're going to be in Vancouver.
I will be at the World Outlook Financial Conference. It's Friday and Saturday, February 2-3. And there's 9 energy companies that we're fans of that are going to be presenting there. And my speech starts at 6:15 in the main ballroom on Friday night. I'll be there at our booth so people can come up and say hello and learn more about our product. And we'd be happy to talk to them.
Thanks again, Joseph.
Of course, Jim, my pleasure.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on howstreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.